Welcome along to this latest podcast. My name's Graham Roy and I'm director of the Fraser Island Institute. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Tricia Finlay, who's director of the Scottish Centre for Employment Research at Strathclyde Business School. And today we're going to talk about fair work and workplace practice in the current context of the pandemic and the crisis and the economic impact that we're facing at the moment. And Tricia, perhaps if you can maybe kick us off this conversation just by giving your take on kind of fair work agenda and what that tells us and what that can help us with as we look at the current situation that we're facing.
Okay, Graham. So I think I'll answer you both as in my role as director of the Scottish Centre for Employment Research, where I have a research team that works very in depth in some of these issues, but also in the context of being the chair of Scotland's Fair Work Convention. And across both of those roles, I suppose we've long argued that fair work's really important, and it's good for individuals, it's good for businesses and other employers, and it's good for Scotland's economy and society as a whole. So we've got a long-standing argument in Scotland and elsewhere that fair work is important, and it doesn't stop being important in a public health crisis. Arguably, it becomes much more important. So let me do, I suppose, a very short intro into what we mean by fair work. In Scotland, and I suppose drawing on our own research and the wider research base, we've defined fair work as being work that delivers effective voice, security, opportunity, fulfilment and respect. So those five key dimensions are what make up fair work, and also that balances the rights and responsibilities of employers and employees and is delivered and designed in such a way that can benefit everyone. And each one of those five dimensions raises, I think, very topical issues which I think we can think about in the context of the current crisis.
Within all of these areas, one of the challenges with an agenda around fair work in the current climate is that you're dealing with people who are going through quite traumatic experiences in their working environment, either that being individuals themselves or employers. And I guess furloughing is the term that, and everyone now is a lot more aware about what that means and the implications of that. So in that context of fair work, which is quite a lot in terms of actual people being in work, but then you've now got the situation of potentially being mothballed or unemployed or temporarily put on hold for a while. What can we learn from the fair work process for people going through that experience?
I suppose the issues that you've raised have speak very closely most specifically to the security dimension of fair work. So there's a lot of research that tells us that security in terms of your employment stability, the income that you receive and the hours that you have to work are really very important to people. But what global research would tell us, that's the most important thing to people in work and employment. So it's a very important part of fair work. And if you think about how the labour force is split up over this time, not all of the labour force are facing the same implications for the security of their employment and their income during this crisis. So we have seen quite widespread discussion about the severe challenges that are facing either the self-employed or more casualised workers, gig economy workers, workers who are on much more insecure contract. So those people who are self-employed or quasi-self-employed, there have been some measures to support those introduced by the UK government, but we know that there are gaps in that provision through which some self-employed workers will fall. So their security is not going to be great if people have been self-employed for less than a year or if they've been employed and self-employed in the same year. So that's those people are facing real challenges.
Are there any particular sector? I mean, self-employment is obviously the big one where we've seen much discussions around, and I guess that there's issues about self-employment, but there's also must be issues by sector as well, where there's some sectors where particularly exposed more than others, and also in types of workers as well. So again, it might look quite different depending on where you are in the labour force and and your background and some of the wider challenges you may already have faced in the labour market at a time like this?
Yeah, I think that we know that precarious workers tend to also have a series of other characteristics of the work that they do that's not particularly consistent with fair work. So precarious workers are often low paid. They often don't act, they are less likely to be able to access the kind of training and support and development which workers who are not precarious are able to access. In terms of sectors, we would be looking, for example, at retail, we'd be looking at things like hospitality, tourism. So there'll be lots of workers who are affected by falling demand. For example, shops and stores have closed, or restaurants and bars have closed, or others, for example, in terms of things like delivery drivers, who feel obliged by economic necessity to keep on working when A, what they're doing might not be essential to the economy and society at this point in time. And that would include all delivery drivers, because we know that some retail workers are now working much more intensively to deliver support to people who are isolated at home. But for others, it might pose a risk to their own health and well-being and to the spread of the virus. So that group occupies a particularly important category that's facing challenges. There are, of course, lots of people who will continue to work and earn, either because they're essential workers, so they are still in work and still carrying out work, or because they're working from home. So perhaps they face fewer difficulties in terms of their security, although clearly they'll face different challenges in terms of the other aspects of fair work, and I'm sure we'll return to that. But to come back to your original question, when it comes to furloughed workers, it's undoubtedly helpful in terms of security and hence in terms of fair work that there is support from government to keep businesses ensuring that people can receive an income, even if that business can't continue operations or if people can't fulfil their normal job roles. But there are other, I suppose, privations, you might call them, difficulties that people face when they're not working, in terms of isolation, keeping their skills up to date, for example. And furloughing doesn't address that. It addresses, to some extent, security of income and employment. And of course, there's another challenge, which is that support is in place for people up to 80% of their income, up to £2,500. And employers are allowed to only pay 80% of that income. So they don't have to take the additional cost of the 20% of income. But some employers who could do this aren't doing it, which I suppose at one level is both curious and unhelpful from a fair work point of view, and indeed from a broader social perspective, because those people who are not being furloughed, who could be furloughed, will find it much more difficult to survive at this point in time. Those employers are leaving workers to rely only on universal credit, which, you know, many would argue doesn't really constitute a secure or a sufficient income. So furloughing is an important response, but employers have to choose to use furloughing, and that means that they have to then think about, could they furlough and should they furlough in as many circumstances as possible? And that would be a fair response to the crisis.
That's really interesting, and you only have to, I guess, look at the numbers in the last couple of days about the uptick in universal credit numbers, yeah, to just see how significant, you know, this is a shock to many businesses, but also getting back to the heart of it, this crisis, which is about people in all of that. And you touched a bit there on obviously the role that employers have. I mean, do you have, are there, what kind of principles, you know, guiding principles come from the Fair Work world in terms of how employers should be approaching that? So obviously thinking ahead to when things hopefully recover and come back to, and supporting their workforce, both as a thing they should be doing anyway, but also thinking ahead as much as they can to their future successes and operation. I mean, is there stuff that you can maybe talk us through in terms of how employers should be viewing this in that context?
I think one of the things that's very interesting is that in the context of a crisis which came on arguably very rapidly for employers have had to consider ways of working and management practices which are not necessarily what they would have considered had those circumstances not arisen. So the research which my own team does at the University of Strathclyde talks a lot about giving people the opportunities to make their best performance, giving them opportunities to make decisions, to take part in discretionary behaviours, I suppose is what we call them, doing the right thing in the right circumstances without being constrained by instructions, for example, allowing people to use their skills and their talents well. We do know that over the last however many years that in the UK, there's a lot of emphasis on kind of command and control type management, perhaps compared to other countries. But in the current crisis, that's not possible. So employers have had to think about innovations and working practices, which probably are at some level are quite good for people. You know, asking people to work when they can, to the best of their ability in difficult circumstances, to use their autonomy, to problem solve, to do all of those things which are really, we would always talk about as being important to drive in innovation and good performance. But at this point, they're absolutely crucial to businesses being able to continue. So that's really interesting, I think, from the point of view of being a researcher in this area, that employers might be using practices that they would never really have used before. So that's, I suppose, one answer to your question. I think there are a whole lot, if we come to things like the Fair Work emphasis on opportunity, there's lots of different things which I think employers need to take into account. Most obviously, the extent to which gender and care responsibilities will impact on people's ability to be able to homework and to homework at particular times rather than the normal working hours that they might engage in during a time when they're physically present at work. So that's really important. How will gender impact on that? How will people's other care responsibilities work impact on that? How will people's disabilities impact on their ability to be able to engage in home working in the same way? And more broadly, what are the implications of home working and home working in isolation for health and well-being? So not just in terms of the very important thing about not putting people in the face of risk, but also, I suppose, how do we keep people well physically and psychologically in circumstances where, for example, businesses have not been able to risk assess home working, which you would normally do, although there are online tools that allow you to try and make some progress on that. But also, how do you help employees with their broader well-being? Because the reality is, we know, largely from the study of unemployment rather than employment, we know that work's very good for people. It provides them with a structure to their day, it gives them lots of opportunities for social interaction, it allows them to use resources, to deploy their skills well, and that's not available in the same form in a home working context. So employers, I think, have a responsibility to try and ensure that that's dealt with in the context where people are home working in isolation.
And I guess within all of that, one of the really important points of that is the whole thing around effective voice and how people who are potentially seeing their work environment turned on its head, either through furloughing or unemployment, and also people who are working flexibly, and it's been imposed on everyone very quickly, and I guess there's big questions about how you can have a conversation about how can you make that as effective and supportive and ultimately so that people can be as productive as possible and you know, support their well-being over time. So that effective voice part of it must be really crucial in all of this.
Absolutely. I mean, I think employers are facing really quite significant challenges in the pace at which they've had to move to home working. And that raises a whole host of issues because you have a much wider set of categories of staff who are home working than perhaps previously. Those staff members are in very different circumstances, so either family and caring circumstances, in the extent to which they have space and time to work. And it's very difficult for employers to say, well, there's a one size fits all that will apply to home working in what is a very uncertain and volatile situation. So the only thing that can make that work is effective voice. And that's not just good communications. It's not just keeping in touch with your employees and telling them what's going on and what you expect of them. But it's actually making sure that that communication is genuinely two-way, that people have the opportunity to say what's working well and what's not working well, that people have the opportunities to put forward ideas and are encouraged to do so about how you make things work better, that people are able to raise concerns where they have concerns, for example, that are more general or in relation to their own well-being. So that effective voice, which is always crucially important to Fair Work, it's always really important to deliver opportunity and security and fulfillment, that you know what your employees are experiencing, that you really understand what the lived experience of Fair Work is. That's crucially important, even though we're not all in the same place and having the same conversations we would have all the time. Even though, for example, the kind of established structures of representation, things like trade unions, might be operating quite differently in the current context, it's really important that those communication structures and that voice still manages to operate, albeit in a very, very different context, because that's how we'll get through the kinds of challenges which are being faced by businesses and organisations of very different types, the length and breadth of the country.
And if we, just picking that point about looking to the, when we get through this, so obviously there's some very difficult days and weeks to come, both for as a society, but also for, and for economy and businesses too. But if we do think ahead to the future, where, touch wood, we're through the immediate risk of the public health emergency and our economy is starting to get back in its feet and things. I mean, what do you think, or trying to foresee, what do you think might be some of the issues we might learn from the experiences through this, and how might this change, you know, fundamentally aspects of work, either in a good or bad way, so what might be the risks as well from all of this for our future workplaces?
I suppose it's very unlikely that we will return to business as usual in exactly the same way, although it's incredibly uncertain what the new normal is going to be. I think we have to be very careful not to see something that's done in an emergency as necessarily a set of practices or approaches that can be maintained in the long term. But it's also really important to learn from what is going on now, because that might tell us a lot about what works and what doesn't work, for example, in terms of things like management practice. So I do research, and my team does research in lots of different organisations, and they have very different views about the extent to which employees can act autonomously in a productive fashion without normal structures of supervision or monitoring or whatever. They might find some very interesting and useful insights about their own labour force. They might find that actually people are very productive, do the right thing when they can, where they're supported to do so. And that might actually herald quite important changes in not just trust relations, but in the range of practices that are open to businesses to be able to engage fairly and productively with their own employees. So I think there's lots of possibilities there. I do think it might tell us lots of interesting things about the balance of work and family life, about how we might be able to do flexible working in a way that's mutually beneficial to staff and to employers. So the balancing, for example, of work with care responsibilities might tell us that we don't need administrative staff to be there between 9 and 5 on a general basis. We might allow some of them to work in ways that allow them better to balance work and family responsibilities and to do that at a distance. Of course, we would have all of the, when you talk about risk, we would have all of the concerns about making sure that that's consistent with both proper health and safety legislation, but also with their own well-being. So there's lots of different things that might be raised. The kind of work that my team does, and that indeed we're working with the Fraser of Allender and on our work on the Propel Hub, that's looking at how management practices and attention to good work and to good job quality can drive innovation and productive outcomes. A lot of that work tells us that what drives innovation in normal and not so normal circumstances is unleashing people to do the right thing, to work productively, to contribute their ideas. So we'll learn a lot in that regard over the coming over the coming weeks and months. And that will tell us lots of things. It will tell us how important work it is to us, productive and useful activity that structures our days, that brings us into contact with lots of different people from whom we learn and exchange and socialise. It might tell us a whole host of things about practices that people didn't think would work or weren't options in their context, but which do work. It might allow us to do things which are better drivers of good relationships at work. So I think we'll end up in a really different context in which to have discussions and do research about employee engagement, management practices, how we support well-being, how we drive productivity in ways that are actually beneficial to everybody who's involved in the workplace sphere.
So just to kind of bring all this together, so if you were chatting to a business today and a business was going through so many different challenges and different risks and trying to think about how it deals with all this uncertainty, and it poses you the question, well, why should it think about fair work at this moment in time when it's got lots of other things to think about? I mean, what would you be your response to that business to help them, guide them through that actually fair work is at the heart of finding the solutions and helping to get through the challenges that they face?
So I suppose it's always been a risk that fair work is considered something that's burdensome on employers, something that you're being asked to do, which is challenging, and especially so in crisis circumstances. But it is really important, not just for the well-being of your own employees, but it's really important to the wider society that employers try their best to deliver fair work currently, because that really does matter. It matters to supporting people during a major public health emergency. It matters not just to individuals, but to us collectively. So I suppose one of the things I would say is, employers need to try as hard as possible to make sure that they deliver fair work in the circumstances, particularly when they're making really difficult choices and they're under huge pressure. Talking to your employees, working out how you can come to arrangements which are fair, will be a benefit. But the other side of that is not just we would like you to do fair work, we would like you to deliver it. It's fair work will help you to solve some of those challenges. Fair work is an asset for employers. We know that people generate the kinds of solutions that allow us to address crises of all different kinds. And we know from research and experience that they're much more likely to do that when they know that their voice matters, when they can have an input, when they're listened to and can make a difference, and when they're supported. So in that sense, fair work matters now. It matters to creating the kinds of relationships, to investing in the kinds of talent that will be not just important immediately to get over the crisis, but to dealing with all the implications of that in the longer term and to building organisations that are much more resilient to the kind of challenges that we've seen more recently, to building those for the future.
I think that's a great message to finish with. So can I just thank you, Tricia, for a fascinating talk. It's been great speaking with you. Hopefully we'll see each other soon. And thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.